Sylvia, thank you for that reading. If you could, if you've got a Bible with you, please do keep it open. It would be an enormous help to me as we go through. My name's Phil Harrington. I'm the rector here, and it's great to see you. And we've come to the final part of our sermon series, looking at 1 Peter. And what we're going to be doing today is seeing how this verse, this passage, helps address a couple of things that our society has struggled with and is struggling with at present. So that we're going to be looking at the question of what good leadership looks like. And we're going to be asking the question, can we live lives that are free from anxiety? Okay, so we're looking at leadership and anxiety. I just want to start with a question. Can you remember someone who's been a good leader in your life? What were they like? What was it about them that made you think they're a good leader? What did they do? How did they make you feel? Now, the question of leadership has been at the forefront of our culture, of our society, the last few weeks or so, since the referendum results was announced. And for a while, there's been a sense of there's no leadership. There's a leadership vacuum. People from different sides of the debate in the EU referendum, when the result was announced, they all seemed to jump ship. And you know, the question of leadership is so important that since Theresa May has been announced as the new Prime Minister, the financial markets have settled a bit. It's amazing how the appointment of a leader has such a wider impact. And we long to be individual, we want to go our own way, but actually when push comes to shove, we yearn for someone who's going to lead us. We yearn for a good leader. But we're also really in our society facing an epidemic of anxiety. I was at an introductory evening, afternoon, down at the Raleigh School for new parents, not new parents, parents of kids who are going to school for the first time. And they were saying, children are really anxious at the moment. And if you look at the latest studies that are around, you see that anxiety and depression in adults is on the rise, and particularly in men. Is it possible to live a life that is free from anxiety? Well, this passage offers us answers to both the questions about good leadership and about anxiety. And we're going to be maybe just reminded that actually good leadership is servant leadership. And we're going to be reminded that the way to live free from anxiety is to have a deep, deep, visceral trust that God cares for you. Okay? They might seem quite simple, but we often forget. So firstly, let's never think about leadership. Now, throughout the scriptures, there is this image that is painted, this picture that is painted again and again and again about what good leadership looks like. And it is that of the shepherd. You see it in Psalm 23. You see it in Ezekiel chapter 34. You see it in John 15, Luke 15 and John 10, where Jesus is saying, I am the good shepherd. And in these closing verses, Peter writes to the elders of all the little churches scattered around what is now northern Turkey. And he says, guys, you are to be shepherds of God's flock that is under your care. And leadership in ministry is a real privilege. It's not a right. And it's not to be taken lightly. And so in these first few verses of chapter 5, we see Peter warning us, don't do it for negative reasons. Don't do it because you feel you're obliged to. Don't do it because you want position or influence or a role. Don't do it for financial gain. Those of us who are in leadership mustn't lead with an arbitrary, arrogant, selfish, suppressing, controlling authority. Because in Christian leadership, the question isn't, how can I be the best shepherd? The question is, what did a sheep need? And how can I enable that? Those of us who lead in ministry are to be constantly asking, what are the needs of the flock? What is going to help nourish and encourage and feed them? What are the potential dangers to the sheep? You know, in Scripture, throughout the Scriptures, when we describe the sheep, it is not a compliment. Because sheep are stupid. Sheep have a habit of wandering off, of getting stuck, of falling down cracks, of needing rescuing. So if you're going to be a shepherd, you're trying to think, what are the dangers to the flock? The flock is vulnerable to attack. Being reminded that we're sheep reminds us that we are vulnerable. And we are vulnerable physically and spiritually. Now, this teaching applies to me as the rector here, but actually it applies to everyone who's in leadership here. So if you're on the church council, if you're a deanery synod rep, if you're a small group leader, if you're part of the children's and youth ministry leadership team, if you lead our men's ministry or women's ministry, if you're a leader of Meeting Point, all of us who have those roles should be shepherds. And we see in verse 4, we're reminded that the ultimate example is Christ, the chief shepherd. So this is to be our sort of model in ministry. But how does this work out? I mean, I love the fact that many of you are committed and you come here on a Sunday and some of you give evenings during the week. But actually, most of you spend more time not at church. How do these principles of leadership apply in the workplace? How is this going to teach you or help you tomorrow morning? Now, the Christian vision of leadership is the same whether you're in ministry or whether you're in the marketplace. It is servant leadership. It's the towel over the arm. It's the washing of the feet. It's the caring for people. It's shepherding them. Jesus taught the disciples in Matthew chapter 20. He said, you know the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, flaunting their authority. Let it not be so with you. So let there be none of us who are Christians, who have a position of leadership in the workplace, lord it over those whom we manage. Leaders need to care for their people. I was reading a couple of years ago Bear Grylls' autobiography. He's a bit of a hero of mine. And he was writing about his time in the SAS. And he was observing that unless you care for your troops, so this is a macho environment, but he said, unless your troops know that you love them, that you care for them, that you're thinking about their needs, they will not follow you into battle. You need to know what they're excited about, what they're terrified of, what they're afraid of, what their hopes are. And if as a leader you do that, people will follow you. And in the SAS, they will follow you into battle. And I don't know about how the workplace is now. It's about 8 or 9 years since I left the city. But when I was there and I was managing teams, you were sort of in the training, you were reminded, so you need to keep a little bit of a, don't get too friendly with your team, because you may need to discipline them. You may need to, in the end, fire them or make them redundant. So make sure there's kind of a little bit of a distance between you two. But if you're a Christian and you're managing people, you need to pierce that veil. You need to bridge that gap. Because actually, you need to be caring for those whom you manage. You need to care deeply. You need to ask questions. After the annual review, how's your home life? How are your kids doing? Is there anything that I can do as your boss that is going to help you? Now, why would you do that? Because as Christians, you think and know that the person you manage bears the image of God. We're created by them. And it's no coincidence that you are their manager, and you're to call out the best in them. And if they ask why, and again, I don't know what the temperature of the city is like these days, I was always quite open about my faith. So it's up to you. You could say, because the God I believe in values you, and so I'm called to value you as well. But you might just say, because I care about you. If there's anything I can do, let me know. And if you manage like that in the workplace, God will do amazing things through you and your teams. And you'll transform the people that you work with, and you may just play a part in transforming the culture of your office. So whether we're in ministry or in the marketplace, we need leaders who care for their flock, who know their flock, who encourage them. It's just a really simple reason why Louise and I would like to have everyone around for supper, so we can get to know you. Begin to understand a little bit about who you are, what you've faced, what your hopes and your dreams are. But we're reminded in verse 6 that all of us should be humble because God opposes the proud. And what's so interesting is that before Jesus Christ came to earth, humility was not a virtue. It was seen as a weakness. It was despised. But it's only since Christ came and then Christianity spread like wildfire around the Mediterranean basin that humility was seen as a virtue and was valued. And humility is not thinking less of yourself. It is just thinking about yourself less and thinking about the needs of others and putting their needs before your own. But often people will ask, and this is a really human response, but if I'm spending all my time thinking about others and caring for other people, who's going to care for me? And you know, there are so many things that we're trying to navigate in life. You know, life is complicated. Some of us here will be worrying about our children's exam results. We might be thinking about the health of elderly parents. We might be worried about our own health. We might be sitting here thinking, I don't know how Brexit is going to affect my job. Will I have a job in 6 months' time, a year's time? We might be thinking about the future direction of our country. We might be worried about the finances at home or at work or in the church. Some of us have got children at university. How are they doing? What kind of friends are they making? Are they doing all right? We might be worried about retirement. Some of us might be worried about, if I really am open and honest about my faith, are people going to, reject me? Is it going to damage my career prospects? You know, being a shepherd can be tough, and being a sheep can be tough. And so we naturally wonder, well, who's going to care for me? Well, you know what I'm going to say. We had it in our reading, and I said it right at the front of the sermon. The answer comes in 1 Peter 5, verse 7. God cares. And here's the thing. Many of us might say, yeah, I know that. But do you really know that? Do you really, really, really know that? Deep, deep, deep within, in your guts, do you know that? Because this is so central to our understanding when we're thinking about, is it possible to live a life that is free from anxiety? Because we are anxious. And the first part of living free from anxiety is actually admitting we are anxious. But it's so funny because if God, the one for whom and through whom the earth, the universe, the cosmos was created, the one who created you and sustains you, the one who thought of you, the one who regards you as so precious that his only son voluntarily chose to come to earth, to seek you and save you and die in your place for you, to bring reconciliation between us and God. If that is all true and he says, I care for you, why do we worry? Why do we find it so hard? Verses 6 and 7 tell us the answer. There are two sins in this passage. Sin of pride and then actually the sin of anxiety. I used to do some work at the church in Battersea. I was on the staff. I used to do some work with some sort of homeless folk and some ex-addicts and some existing addicts. And there was a lady there called Debs. And Debs was amazing. She had tried everything that the world had told her would satisfy her to try and heal the wounds that she'd experienced. And she had 8 or 9 kids. She'd spent time in prison. She'd been on drugs. She'd slept with more men than she could actually remember. And she'd come to realize when she hit rock bottom that it was only Jesus Christ who could set her free. And she said, you know, Phil, I've got this place inside me. It's called my knower. It's deep in here, and it's where I know stuff about myself. And I've come to realize deep in my knower that God cares for me. And I just wonder, actually, when we struggle with anxiety, what we're really saying is, in our knower, we don't trust that God cares for us. We don't believe that God cares for us. We're too scared to trust God. We're too proud to trust God, to think that he actually does care for us. We keep God's grace and his love at arm's length, and we try to control our own lives. And we can't, and it terrifies us. And it's been exposed the last couple of weeks in our church family here. People die very suddenly. It's exposed again this week in France. We can control nothing. And it terrifies us. And so we try to earn as much money as we can and have a retirement plan and have a good home. We're terrified for our kids, so we try to give them the best education that we can. And deep down, we don't trust that God cares for us. And so we're anxious. And then we see this bit, but why is anxiety a sin? And I find it's really hard to say, because I am someone who struggles with anxiety. And I've had 3 or 4 like really big anxiety attacks in my life. But if we are really true, if we have the courage to look in our hearts, really look and examine our hearts, we'll realize actually we don't trust God. We don't truly trust that he cares for us. Whatever happens in life, that whatever the slings and arrows that come our way, that God can redeem them, God can use them, that he loves us, he knows what we're going through, that he can use this stuff that we face to help us to grow. And the more that I read 1 Peter 5, verse 7, I realize it's not really an invitation. I think it's a command. I think it's, Philip, cast all your anxieties onto me because I care for you. Now, a couple of, so not this last week, but the week before, just gone, I got up with one of our children and got them back to bed really quickly, and I was really proud of myself about that. But then I couldn't get back to sleep. It was about 1 o'clock in the morning. I got back into bed, and for 3 hours I was awake, and I was just anxious about some of the stuff that people in the congregation were struggling with, and I didn't know what to do about it. And I was leading on that Sunday, and I had no idea how to work proclaim. And I thought, I don't know, I'm going to be exposed. I don't know about that. And it just gets more and more and more. Your mind kind of starts leaping down in your anxiety. And so I decided I'd go and get a mug of hot milk, because that kind of works sometimes. And then I thought I would read, because that makes you tired, apparently. Then I thought I'd do some deep breathing exercises, because I've done those in the past. And then I was in the spare room, so I started doing Pilates, thinking, well, if I can just stretch and relax, that will help me go to sleep. And I was again getting more and more frustrated that I couldn't sleep. And about 3:30 in the morning, I thought, I know, I'll pray and I'll read the Bible. And I turned to 1 Peter 5, verse 7, and I meditated upon it over and over and over. Cast all your anxiety upon the Lord because he cares for you. So I was like this in bed. Father, I'm so anxious about so many things. Father, you tell me I should cast all my anxiety on you, not just some of it. But I'm anxious about this, and I'm anxious about that, and I can't do anything about it. And the people at St. Mary's, it's actually your church, it's not my church. They're your people. Will you hold them overnight? Will you care for them? Help them to draw close to you. Father, this is the stuff I'm worried about. Will you come and transform it? I cast it onto you. I refuse to worry about it anymore. Thank you that you love me. Thank you that you care for me. Thank you that you're here. Thank you that you're not judging me for being anxious. Will you do your stuff? 5 minutes later, I was asleep. Now, why I waited 2.5 hours to get to that point, and I'm your rector, I don't know. But there is that still that part of you that wants to control what you struggle with. So, if you're feeling like that, do they still sell TCP? Can you still buy that? It used to be like an antiseptic that your headmistress would put on you when you fell over and cut your knee at school. But it heals wounds. The TCP is a way to begin to healing the wounds of anxiety. So when you're anxious, think, what am I anxious about? Really try to get to know it. Understand, why am I anxious about this? See, cast it on to God. Give it to him. Cast it into his arms. And then P is praise. Praise God. Thank you that you care for me. Thank you that you love me. Thank you that you're with me. Thank you. Lord, will you transform this for your glory? If you keep doing that over and over and over, I promise you that in 12 months' time, you'll be less anxious. You'll be more peaceful. You'll have experienced God more in your life if you do that. It's not going to be overnight. It might be, but it's not for me. I am less anxious than I was 12 months ago. I'm slowly growing in this, and you will too. So we're coming into land. It's quite warm in here. You've done well not to fall asleep. So what does good leadership look like? Whether you're in ministry or you're in the marketplace, it is servant leadership. It is about how can I serve those who are under my care? How can I protect them? How can I encourage them? How can I call out the best in them? How can I love them? Is it possible to be free from anxiety? The scriptures say yes, absolutely. And that comes from deeply knowing that you are loved and cared for. And in your knower, where Deb said, that's where I know stuff about myself, in your knower. And what we're going to do now, you can see the bits of paper that you've got, the little card that says, Lord, I am anxious about, because we have to admit that we are. And if the band can come up and get into place, that'd be great. What we're going to do is just take a moment now. If you are struggling with any anxiety, I want you to write it down. Okay? And then fold it up.